from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you're hearing this broadcast, unless you're hearing it very late at night, I have just left Chicago, Illinois, on my way to New Orleans, Louisiana. And yes, I'll tell you all about it on next week's broadcast, my first visit to New Orleans since the recent unpleasantness. But we'll talk about it today, too, from what we've learned this week. This is by way of explaining, however, that since I believe I'm in the air as I'm on the air, and since the FAA has not yet legalized live broadcasting from a commercial jet, what a wonderful day that's going to be. You know, you're sitting in your seat. Maybe you have a center seat in economy, and on either side of you is, you know, Fruit Face and Jeff, the morning guys, doing their live broadcast from 30,000 feet for 4 hours. That could be fun. Hey, what do you got in those pants, man? When you get up to the men's room, we're going to know. By the way, I have to say, just apropos, because this will not be a timely broadcast, since it's been recorded before I left for Chicago. Time, then, for this story, apropos of what I was just talking about. My favorite nickname story of all time. Specifically, you know, those morning guys on regular radio, as we call it, all have really bizarre nicknames. And I was in a certain city. I'm not going to mention it by name. This will be identifiable enough to the persons involved. I was in a certain city doing a promotional appearance on one of those regular radio shows with a significant other of mine. The fabulous Miss Judith Owen, as a matter of fact. And we were on the radio with Boomer and Jeff, I think, was the team. I don't know if it was Jeff, but I know it was Boomer. And, you know, we survived. We lived to tell the tale. Boomer was about 23 years old. And as we were being driven back from the radio station to our temporary living quarters, as I guess FEMA calls it these days, I asked the guy driving the station van. I said, gee, he's a little young to be a boomer. He said, no, that's not how he got that name. I said, well, how did he get that name? He said, well, you know, when he was in the fourth grade, you know, cause it should be said, Boomer was even now a little on the avoirdupois deal side. You see what I'm saying? Big bone gentleman. He says, when he was in the fourth grade, the police came, a couple of the DARE cops came to school, the anti-drug DARE cops came to school, and they had a pet pig that they used to kind of get the kids entertained while they were doing the anti-drug thing. And the pig's name was Boomer. That's right. He was named after the anti-drug cops pig. Nickname of the year, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, we are reviewing the situation on today's Hello, Welcome to the Show.
A man's got a heart, hasn't he? Joking apart, hasn't he? And though I'd be the first one to say that I wasn't a saint, I'm finding it hard to be really as black as they paint. I'm reviewing the situation. Can a fellow be a villain all his life? All the trials and tribulation. Better settle down and get myself a wife. And a wife would cook and sew for me, and come for me, and go for me, and go for me, and nag at me. The fingers she will wag at me, the money she will take from me, a misery she'll make from me. I think I'd better think it out again. A wife you can keep. Anyway, I'd rather sleep. Anyway, left without anyone in the world, and I'm starting from now. So how to win friends and to influence people. So how? I'm reviewing the situation. I must quickly look up everyone I know. Title people with a station who can help me make a real impressive show. I will own a suite at Claridge's and run a fleet of carriages and wave at all the duchesses with friendliness as much as is befitting of my new estate. Good morning to you, magistrate. I think I'd better think it out again. So where shall I go? Somebody? Who do I know? Nobody. All my dearest companions have always been villains and thieves. So at my time of life, I should start turning over new leaves. I'm reviewing the situation. If you want to eat, you've got to earn a bob. Is it such a humiliation for a robber to perform an honest job? So a job I'm getting, possibly. I wonder who the boss will be. I wonder if he'll take to me, what bonuses he'll make to me. I'll start at 8 and finish late at normal rate and all. But wait, I think I'd better think it out again. What happens when I'm 70? Must come a time, 70, when you're old and it's cold, and who cares if you live or you die? The one consolation's the money you may have put by. The situation. I'm a bad'un and a bad'un I shall stay. You'll be seeing no transformation, but it's wrong to be a rogue in every way. I don't want nobody hurt for me or made to do the dirt for me. This rotten life is not for me. It's getting far too hot for me. Don't want no one to rob for me. But who will find a job for me? There is no in-between for me, but who will change the scene for me? I think I'd better think it out again.
Just watch your faces. It's the sunlight shining.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, although really in the air, on the way to the French Quarter of New Orleans. If that's not confusing enough, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. We're reviewing a couple of situations. First of all, the situation in New Orleans, since that's where I'm heading. And it drew a certain amount of attention this week when Representative Charles Melançon, thank you very much, I worked on it, he represents, I believe, St. Bernard and or Plaquemine Parishes, the areas east of New Orleans that were incredibly hard hit. I believe St. Bernard Parish lost, check this, 100% of its housing during Hurricane Katrina. That's a big hit. And those were all white folks, by the way. Just a piece of information that didn't quite make the national news. Anyway, he released this week some of the emails from former FEMA head, Mike Brown, now just a potato head, but once a real FEMA head. Mike Brown's still working for FEMA, by the way, as we all know now. But these emails have been so popular, I think Representative Melançon's website has been kind of overwhelmed. So as a public service to him, to you, and to Mike Brown, damn it, I'm going to share some of Brownie's email gems with you today. Won't you? From Michael Brown, sent Friday, August 26th to Sharon Worthy. Subject, dress code. Tie or not for tonight? Button-down blue shirt? From Michael D. Brown to Cindy Taylor. Cindy wrote to him. This is on the day Katrina hit. Cindy wrote to Mike Brown, "My eyes must certainly be deceiving me. You look fabulous. And I'm not talking the makeup." Mike Brown replied, "I got it at Nordstrom's. Email McBride and make sure she knows. Are you proud of me? Can I quit now? Can I go home?" That was on the day Katrina hit. On the day Katrina hit, Monday, August 29th, from Mike Brown to Cindy Taylor and Marty Bahamonde, who was the FEMA guy on scene, sending actual descriptions of what was going on at the Superdome. Mike sent this email. "If you look at my lovely FEMA attire, you'll really vomit. I am a fashion god." Marty replied, "Now I am going to vomit." From Sharon Worthy on Sunday, September 4th, almost a week after Katrina hit, to Mike Brown. Subject, your shirt. Here's the text of the email. "Please roll up the sleeves of your shirt. All shirts. Even the president rolled his sleeves to just below the elbow. In this crisis and on TV, you just need to look more hardworking. Capital letters now. Roll up the sleeves! Exclamation point. And from Betty Gooman, who is, I guess, also at FEMA. We don't have her email address. "Nice to be able to see you again, even if on TV. Is this your last hurrah?" Mike replied on Friday, September 2nd, 4 days after Katrina hit, "Last hurrah was supposed to have been Labor Day. I'm trapped now. Please rescue me." The email wit and wisdom of Mike Brown.
Brownie, this is for you. So many thousands flooded out of their homes. No way to know unless you turn some kind of knob. But you stood real tall. Your shirt was pressed. Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
A heck of a job. A job. Folks trapped in the dome, the convention center too. No food to beg or borrow or rob. Only Champagne and Geraldo could get to the scene. Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
It's hard work to do much more than you can. You're not a general or an expert, you're only a man. Folks say we weren't ready, we didn't have a plan. But it's time to shuck right down to the cob. There wasn't no way to be knowing that a hurricane was blowing. Brownie, that wasn't even part of your job. Job, you did your best, old friend. We owe you thanks. I can't say I'm not choking up, holding back a sob. But you'll still have a big old desk and a paycheck to match. Brownie, you did a heck of a job.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
In fact, Brownie, you did one hell on earth of a job.
While Brownie's risible correspondence did make national news, something that got considerably less attention, unless I'm very much mistaken, and am I the host of this show or not? Then I'm very much not mistaken. The report, it's been filtering through major newspapers. I don't think it's made it through the video curtain yet, but this week the Senate Homeland Security Committee, I feel better already, just knowing there's one of those. The Senate Homeland Security Committee, chaired by, I don't know who chairs it, but I saw her talking as if she were the chairman. So I'm going to give her the chairmanship. Susan Collins, Senator Republican from Maine, had a hearing where she heard from some of the scientists who've been conducting preliminary forensic. See, that's the magic word. If I say that, then all the people who like CSI will perk up. Forensic investigations of the causes of the breaches in the flood walls, not the levees, the flood walls that caused most of the flooding in New Orleans. These scientists are working for the National Science Foundation. A couple got a grant from there from the LSU Hurricane Center till the money runs out over there. And from the American Society of Civil Engineers. And I, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you have to work with an engineer, the least they can be is civil. See what I'm saying? They reported to this committee hearing on Wednesday their findings that up to now, what it looks like is that the failure of the flood walls, especially the two that flooded most of the central part of New Orleans, were caused not by the water going over the top, as was the original explanation of the Army Corps of Engineers, ladies and gentlemen, but instead by design and construction flaws of the walls. Most specifically, the pilings that served as the foundation for the flood walls were not driven deep enough into the soil to get past the weak Swamp Pete. You remember him, Swamp Pete? He used to sell bait down by the Swamp peat that just gave way, that just sort of oozed out of the way when the water came. They could have driven the piles deeper. That was, as one of the scientists said, that would have been an easy and quick and cheap thing to do at the time. There were documents that came out a couple of weeks ago from the firm that did the construction of that flood wall, Pittman Construction, now out of business, I wonder. Pittman Construction, which said to the Army Corps of Engineers at the time, this soil isn't going to, we're not, and the Army Corps of Engineers said, sure, go ahead, just keep building. Just keep building. So that testimony is on the record now at the Senate Homeland Security Committee, ladies and gentlemen. And what it says, in preliminary form, they'll be doing more work. And the Army Corps of Engineers is going to investigate, by gum, with complete transparency. And I have some bridges available, too. But the preliminary findings, as I say, do seem to indicate one interesting fact. That the drowning of New Orleans... Oh, and the other part of it was that... the eastern side, the New Orleans East and the Ninth Ward, the flooding there was exacerbated, thank you so much, it's my pleasure, by the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, a canal the Army Corps of Engineers, there's that name again, built to facilitate shipping. It's just to get a straight line from the Gulf up to New Orleans, even though a lot of ships don't use it, and people warned for years it would just amplify any storm surge and serve as a funnel to dump storm surge into New Orleans. And that's what it did. So with those findings, what it looks like preliminarily is that the flooding of New Orleans and its eastern suburbs was caused by the federal government. Not by any one political party, don't start that, by the federal government. The Army Corps of Engineers is part of the federal government. So, Ronald Reagan was right. The government really is the problem. But the next time you hear some of those people saying, well, do we really want the federal government to pay for the rebuilding of New Orleans? The only question would be, well, why not? They paid for destroying it.
We were too late with food and the water. Couldn't get close with a 10-foot pole, so we failed to accomplish just what we oughter. But we're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. Nobody's there now, gonna be plenty. Even the ex-gov be out on parole. I got building biz pals, maybe 10 or 20. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. They said we were slow pokes. Spunky, never too late for to be in control. Building a new town, too busy to be funky. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. This isn't the time now for a pointing old fingers. That's much from now. Memories grow cold, even though the slime still lingers. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. Make it more like us, so no one needs a bus. Force One now, you can see the big picture. All those victims, mainly black as coal, can't leave them so poor now, while we just get richer. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. are such great ideas for this whole reconstruction. The best and the brightest gonna play their role, and the locals have bit parts in the production. We're gonna make New Orleans whole. Yeah, we're gonna make New Orleans whole. New Orleans whole. God bless.
Chain. guess my race is nearly won. I'm a going back to spend the rest of my days in the house called the Rising Sun.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to read the trades for you. A couple of fine ones this week. Of course, you'll be the judge of that, won't you? Med school professors oppose drug ads. I'll read it for you. This is from Advertising Age. In an effort organized by the nonprofit advocacy group Commercial Alert, more than 200 medical school professors have signed a document calling for the end of direct-to-consumer prescription drug ads. The statement's endorsers include prominent medical school professors from Harvard, Johns Hopkins, University of Pennsylvania, Columbia, Stanford, Yale, Duke, University of California, San Francisco, and other top medical schools, along with two former editors-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. Sounds elitist to me. Commercial Alert wrote and organized the statement and released it. It reads, in part, direct-to-consumer marketing of prescription drugs should be prohibited. In 2004, pharmaceutical companies spent more than $4 billion advertising to promote prescription drugs. This advertising does not promote public health. It increases the cost of drugs and the number of unnecessary prescriptions and can be harmful and deadly to patients. It goes on to read, prescription drug advertising pressures health professionals to prescribe particular medications, often the ones that may be less effective and more expensive. It is not educational. It is inherently misleading. There were public hearings this week featuring more than 40 speakers, each having 12 minutes to state their case for or against direct-to-consumer advertising. The FDA has been cracking down on prescription drug marketing. The hearings could lead to more restrictive guidelines on the practice. So you only have a few more months to memorize those side effects, ladies and gentlemen. And now, from Computer World, questions about the security and accuracy of electronic voting systems are likely to continue into the 2006 national elections because the U.S. government has not yet completed work on electronic voting guidelines, according to a report by the government. They're busting themselves. With lingering concerns about the security of e-voting systems, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission needs to define security policies and set up a machine certification program, says the report issued by the U.S. Government Accountability Office. Until these efforts are completed, quoting the report, there is a risk that many state and local jurisdictions will rely on voting systems that were not developed, acquired, tested, operated, or managed in accordance with rigorous security and reliability standards, potentially affecting the reliability of future elections and voter confidence, says the report. The Election Assistance Commission, established with the Help America Vote Act, passed by Congress in 2002, is working to help state and local governments improve their management of e-voting systems, the GAO said, working on security and reliability standards and on programs to certify voting machines and accredit independent laboratories to test machines. But those efforts aren't finished and are unlikely to have a significant effect in the 2006 election cycle, the report says. GAO asserted that electronic voting systems must be secure and reliable, and EAC agrees, says the commission. Security has always been a top priority at EAC. Unquote, even though the machines are ready. The EAC and the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, are developing a vulnerability analysis of e-voting systems, the EAC statement said. The EAC also questioned the GAO's reference to security and reliability questions about e-voting. GAO report relies on documents produced by other people. The agency didn't substantiate those reports of security and reliability problems, the EAC added. The Information Technology Association of America, a trade group representing some e-voting machine vendors, said state election officials started late working through e-voting machine concerns because of delays in Congress to set up the EAC and because of congressional delays in funding. The EAC and NIST have, quote, put forth a steady stream of best practices guidance, but Congress gave the EAC no regulatory authority to make the states comply. Says Representative Tom Davis, chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. It's certainly disappointing that despite the recommendations from federal organizations and non-governmental groups, many states still have not made progress to make sure their electronic voting systems are safe from fraud and can be relied upon to accurately count votes. Democrats called for more congressional action. And Harry Shearer called for voting with paper and pencil, like they do in Australia. But that's just something that occurs to me when I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Stop and stare as if they'd never seen a heart in love. And though I see them, I don't care, 'cause I'm too busy thinking about our love. Thinking about that each and every morning I wake up to that love glow in your eyes. And though it seems I'm hooked on fixation, I will not stop my daydreaming until my nights are true with you. Oh baby, my love is on fire. Oh baby, my heart is on the wire. Oh baby, I'm burning with desire. I want to feel your love. I need to feel your love mixed with your name, as if you're witness to my every word. And though it seems sometimes insane, something within me tells me they'll be heard. So I wait so patiently the moment when my love fantasies will come to life. And all I need from you, and then I will be living through those moments that I've longed with you. Ooh, baby, my love is on fire. Ooh, baby, my heart is on the wire. Ooh, baby, I'm burning with desire. I want to
he would love.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's review the situation involving the assertion, believed to be erroneous, the assertion by the United States government and its representatives, supposedly elected, that Iraq was trying to buy or had bought or was fixing to buy uranium from the African country of Niger. This is, of course, the story which is at one and the same time at the, part of the basis for the justification for going to war with Iraq and the basis of the indictment of former chief of staff to the vice president and assistant to the president. It turns out it's Irv, not Irving. Irv Lewis. Scooter Libby. Now resigned from those posts to mount a defense. And there have been, while the indictment and its associated phenomena have gotten a lot of national attention, what hasn't really gotten as much attention is the underlying story about the accusation, the allegation that Iraq was buying uranium from Niger. What seems to be coming about, what seems to be coming into focus is that those reports all seem to emanate from Italy, that certain folks who had worked for the Italian military intelligence agency, SISMI, were peddling what turned out to be forged documents. And they tried selling them to the French. They tried selling them to the British. Tried selling him, the former member of SISMI apparently did that, tried selling him to the United States. Bingo! And the Italian Parliament held a closed-door hearing this week into all of this, after which one of the senators, I believe, came out and said publicly that the Italian government had, the Italian intelligence agency had warned the United States that the uranium Niger story was bogus in early 2003 before the invasion. And then a short time later he corrected himself and said that wasn't what happened. So everything's much clearer now. if Scooter Libby goes to trial, which seems to be the way they're playing it at the moment, he was arraigned this week and pled not guilty, then three of the main witnesses will be Tim Russert of NBC News, Matt Cooper of Time Magazine, and Judy Miller, who reports say is trying to stay on at the New York Times, even though in its big explanatory article a few weeks ago, the editor of the Times, managing editor, the editor, whatever, Bill Keller, said that in his estimation, she, Judy Miller, had misled the Washington bureau chief, her editor, supposedly, and had managed to get back on the weapons of mass destruction beat, even though he had ordered her to stay off it. Judy Miller, who had described herself in an article in the Times as Miss Runamuck. She'll be a good witness.
Queen of the newsroom. My colleagues eye me with gloom. They came in with a new broom, but me it couldn't sweep. I'm the one they had to keep, because I've got the access. When I'm around, the Veep relaxes, ignores taxes, and just leaks. I'm the open ear he seeks. It's through me the leakage courses. I got all his secret sources. I was in the armed forces, embedded up to here, wore the uniform to cheer. And to back up my supporting, I even dabbled in reporting. Miss Runamuck, that's what they call me at the paper. I'm capable of any caper till I run out of luck. Miss Runamuck, not the name I write under, but my words crack with thunder till you wonder what I'm smoking or sucking. 'Cause the plums I was plucking had to come from something more than pluck. From Miss Runamuck. I'm the queen of the newsroom, the one they couldn't not groom, even though I wrote Valerie Plume. Or was it Flame? I can't remember. Taking notes is such a drag, each word a dying ember. Who said what and when? It's not my bag. What's then is then. So I'm a pal of Chalabi. He had a tall tale or two for me. Some say I should have checked it out, shown some doubt, but if I'd put him in a cage, put a hold on his outrage, kept his notions off the stage, pulled the curtain... Only one thing is certain, no matter how prudent or sage, I wouldn't have made the front page. Miss Runamuck, not my name in the slammer. Was it Valerie Flammer that I wrote in my notes? At least the gals in the joint got my point. I got sprung, they're still stuck. I'm Miss Runamuck. Miss Runamuck. If my friends are indicted and they lose, I might have to go back to news. Step down, I'd lose my crown, have to withstand the frowns of all the clowns at the Times. The nickel dimes who think because I'm in the Libby lobby. Not Libby, he's a crank. Libby's a one-man think tank. You don't get mad at your horse when he spills you if he's a good faith source. But the naggers at the rag think I walk and look and quack like a duck. 'Cause I'm Miss Runamuck.
Jam. back, here I am. Hotel, there in a room my thoughts Salome. Hotel, asked her to dance, she didn't know me. Hotel, smiling I lied, I have a penny. Hotel, sorry she sighed, I haven't any. Hotel, look here I am, here I am. Hotel, telling the time, eating the jam. Look here I am. Watching the TV. Hotel, man on the screen says he can see me. Hotel, now silent he lies behind a rainbow. Hotel, what a surprise, we're in the same show. Hotel, look here I am. Look, here I am, 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 here I am.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR Worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet on your computer at two different locations whenever you want it, live and archive. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. Available at channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. It's too available, don't you think? And it'd be just like being a little less available if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.